Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Three Judges or One Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 4, 2015, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Shapiro v. McManus. In this case, several Maryland citizens sued state election officials claiming that a 2011 redistricting plan violated their rights to political association and equal representation under the First and 14th Amendments. Although federal law normally requires such claims to be heard by a three-judge federal court, a single judge dismissed the suit for failure to state a claim, and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit affirmed. The question before the Supreme Court is whether a single-judge federal district court may determine that a claim governed by the Three-Judge Court Act is insubstantial, and that three judges, therefore, are not required, not because it concludes that the complaint is wholly frivolous, but because it concludes that the complaint fails to state a claim under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 12b-6. To discuss the case, we have Michael T. Morley, who is assistant professor at Barry University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Morley.
The Supreme Court recently heard oral argument in Shapiro versus McManus. Shapiro, like many civil procedure cases, presents a narrow technical dispute that might seem boring, but can have profound ramifications for people's ability to enforce certain constitutional rights. The fundamental questions at issue in Shapiro, which I'll explain in greater detail, concern how easy it should be for a federal judge to get rid of certain types of constitutional challenges, and how easy it should be for plaintiffs in those cases to get to the U.S. Supreme Court. Shapiro involves the modern incarnation of the Three-Judge Court Act, currently codified at 28 U.S.C. 2284. That law provides that when a plaintiff files a federal lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of congressional redistricting or state legislative apportionment, or when some other federal statute requires it, a three-judge district court must be convened to adjudicate the case. The statute specifies that when a plaintiff moves to convene such a three-judge panel, the assigned district judge must immediately notify the chief judge of the district, who must form the panel, unless that district judge, quote, determines that three judges are not required. Shapiro involves a dispute over the meaning of that phrase, over the meaning of when three judges are not required. That clause was added to the Three-Judge Court Act as part of a 1976 amendment. As I'll explain in greater detail, the Fourth Circuit held that even when a constitutional claim falls within the Three-Judge Court Act, even when it deals with congressional districting or state legislative apportionment, a district court is not required to convene a three-judge panel if the assigned judge determines that the plaintiffs have failed to state a claim under Rule 12b-6's now traditional Twombly-Iqbal standard. Petitioners argue that a three-judge panel must make all decisions relating to the merits of a constitutional claim that falls under the Three-Judge Court Act. They're seeking to reverse the Fourth Circuit's ruling. Under petitioners' view, when plaintiffs file a claim that falls within the Act, a three-judge court must be convened unless the court would lack jurisdiction, the claim is not justiciable, or the claim is frivolous on its face in the sense of clearly being foreclosed by precedent. So what is at stake here? On its face, this case asks the following question. If a district judge thinks that a constitutional challenge that falls under the Three-Judge Court Act is a loser, can the judge dismiss the case herself, or must a three-judge panel be convened to decide whether to dismiss it? Everyone agrees that if the constitutional challenge is squarely foreclosed by precedent, the single judge may dismiss it. The dispute here is whether the judge also may dismiss the case, even if it wouldn't be deemed frivolous, and it isn't directly contrary to binding precedent. In some ways, this might seem like a low-stakes dispute, but here's the key, and here's what's really at stake. If a case is referred to a three-judge panel, regardless of how that panel rules, the plaintiffs have a right of direct appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. Not only do they get to skip the intermediate appellate court, but they're not required to file a petition for certiorari. Rather, the court hears the case on its merits. In contrast, if a case is dismissed by a single district judge and never makes it through it to a three-judge panel of the district court, then there is no right of direct appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the case will wind its way through the traditional appellate process, including review by the Circuit Court of Appeals and a petition for certiorari to the Supreme Court. Thus, if a plaintiff makes it to a three-judge panel, it stands an excellent chance of having the matter considered on the merits by the Supreme Court, rather than having its claims drown in the cert pool. That, I would suggest, is the real prize at issue in this case. Shapiro arose from Maryland's 2011 congressional redistricting. The state legislature adopted a new redistricting plan that departed dramatically from earlier ones. Over 25% of the state's voters were shifted into new districts. Several critics have attacked the plan as heavily gerrymandered. One federal judge described the newly formed 3rd congressional district in particular as, quote, reminiscent of a broken-winged pterodactyl lying prostrate across the center of the state. A bipartisan group of voters filed a federal lawsuit challenging the plan, alleging that the new districts were politically gerrymandered in violation of their First Amendment right of political association and their 14th Amendment right to vote. They requested that a three-judge court be convened. The district court judge to whom the case was assigned refused to initiate creation of a three-judge panel. Instead, he dismissed the case under Rule 12b-6 for failure to state a claim. Applying binding Fourth Circuit precedent, he determined that the plaintiff's allegations did not entitle them to relief, instead of simply confirming whether their claims were justiciable or foreclosed by binding precedent. And the Fourth Circuit affirmed that ruling. Petitioners, in challenging the Fourth Circuit's ruling, have strong precedent on their side. In Goosby v. Osser, the Supreme Court held, quote, a claim is insubstantial only if its unsoundness clearly results from the previous decisions of this court as to foreclose the subject. In other words, a claim is insubstantial, and a three-judge court need not be convened only if prior decisions inescapably render the claim frivolous. This decision was handed down before the Three-Judge Court Act was amended to include the clause at issue in this case. Petitioners argue, however, that there is nothing to suggest that Congress intended to change or overrule the court's longstanding interpretation of the act by making that 1976 amendment. The plaintiff's argument also is consistent with the court's general federal question jurisprudence. A court may exercise subject matter jurisdiction under 28 U.S.C. 1331 over an alleged federal claim, even if the court later determines that the plaintiffs fail to state a claim under Rule 12b-6. An alleged federal question falls outside the scope of a court's federal question jurisdiction only if it is, quote, so insubstantial, implausible, foreclosed by prior decisions of this court, or otherwise completely devoid of merit as not to involve a federal controversy. Respondents, in contrast, argued in their brief that the language at issue was added to the Three-Judge Court Act specifically to overturn earlier precedents that limited the authority of single judges to dispose of meritless cases. Respondent also contends that empowering district judges to dispose of meritless cases would promote judicial economy by minimizing the number of three-judge courts that have to be convened. During oral argument, counsel for the petitioners, Michael Kimberly, began by arguing that the 1976 amendment to the Three-Judge Court Act, which added the language at issue, simply codified the court's longstanding interpretation of the Act and practice under the Act. In response to questioning from Justice Scalia, Kimberly mounted a two-pronged argument. On the one hand, he maintained, the court could simply reaffirm its long-standing interpretation of the Act and allow single judges to dismiss claims that fall under the Act only if there is no jurisdiction, they are not justiciable, or they are indisputably foreclosed by precedent. On the other hand, he pointed out, the court could alternatively hold that single judges simply may not dispose of claims at all. The court could require that all constitutional challenges subject to the Act be referred to a three-judge court, as the statute's text suggests. Surprisingly, numerous justices seemed ready to consider reducing or even eliminating the power that current Supreme Court precedent grants to single judges and that all circuits currently recognize to dispose of claims due to frivolousness or lack of jurisdiction. Justice Kennedy was concerned that claims might be dismissed because they conflicted with Supreme Court precedents that have become subsequently undermined by later developments in other opinions or even academic commentary. He seemed interested in ensuring that three-judge district courts be available to hear such cases to ensure that a quick and direct path to the Supreme Court remains open to allow it to reconsider such precedents. The Chief Justice also seemed inclined to reduce the power of single judges to dismiss claims. He pointed out that it can be hard to distinguish between a claim that fails on the merits under Rule 12b-6 and one that is squarely foreclosed by precedent. Rather than engaging in such line drawing, all such cases could simply be referred to a three-judge panel. Justice Scalia even suggested that there may be no reason to allow single judges to resolve jurisdictional issues. During respondents' argument, Justice Breyer asked Assistant Attorney General Stephen Sullivan why Congress would have wanted to allow a single judge to make a 12b-6 merits determination on a constitutional claim that Congress decided was important enough to include under the Three-Judge Court Act. Sullivan argued that judicial economy concerns warrant giving single judges broad authority to dispose of claims without having to convene three-judge courts. Perhaps the highlight of the argument came when Justice Kagan confronted Sullivan over whether he was changing his argument before the court. Justice Kagan pointed out that respondents' brief argued that Congress changed the meaning of the Three-Judge Court Act when it amended the statute in 1976. During oral argument, however, Sullivan claimed that even prior to the 1976 amendment, single judges had broad authority to dispose of claims they believed failed on the merits without convening a three-judge court. Sullivan insisted that in several pre-1976 cases, the Supreme Court allowed single judges to dismiss challenges that fell within the Act on their merits for failure to state a claim. Several justices asked him to identify those cases, with Justice Scalia going so far as to suggest that respondent would win if the cases stated what Sullivan claimed. In rebuttal, petitioner's counsel concluded on the powerful point that cases subject to the Three-Judge Court Act tend to be politically sensitive. It is better to have a panel of three judges, which might be bipartisan, decide whether the plaintiffs have stated a claim rather than a single district court judge. Perhaps the most ironic thing about this case is that it appears that the lower courts could have avoided this debate over the applicable legal standard entirely. Rather than basing its ruling on 12b-6, the district court could have dismissed the case under 12b-1 due to lack of subject matter jurisdiction on the grounds that political gerrymandering claims are non-justiciable. Even under the petitioner's view of the case, a single judge has the power to decline to convene a three-judge court if the plaintiff's claims are either outside of the court's jurisdiction, non-justiciable, or facially frivolous. Here, even if binding precedent did not squarely foreclose plaintiff's specific claims on the merits, there's a reasonable argument that, at least under current law, they are non-justiciable. And the court's precedents give single judges much more leeway to dismiss cases on justiciability grounds than on disagreements with the merits of plaintiffs' constitutional claims. This case will have tremendous ramifications for both sides of the political spectrum. In particular, it will not only affect plaintiffs' ability to challenge congressional and state legislative redistricting, but also campaign finance laws. The Federal Election Campaign Act, or FECA, contains a special judicial review provision comparable to the Three-Judge Court Act, requiring that many constitutional questions concerning FECA be immediately certified to the en banc Court of Appeals. The Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, or BCRA, enacted in 2003, contains its own judicial review provision, requiring that any constitutional challenges to the act be adjudicated by a three-judge court in Washington, D.C. Thus, Shapiro v. McManus will determine how easy it is for single judges to dismiss both redistricting cases and campaign finance challenges, and how easy it is for plaintiffs in such cases to present their claims to the Supreme Court.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.